Hello, humans. Welcome to the Chill the Fuck Out podcast. I'm your host, Ashley O'Brien. Welcome to a space meant to be for you to pause your day, week, month, or even year, to take a breath and a moment for yourself with yourself. A place to discuss, learn, grow through, and maybe even laugh about mental illness, trauma, abuse, mental health, emotional difficulties, healing, and what we can do to overcome it all, to live and be present in lives we love. Hello, humans. I hope you're having a great week. Today, we are continuing the discussion about self-care practices with a focus on meditation, specifically for survivors of childhood trauma, neglect, and abuse. I do have two cats, and I've spent a lot of time editing out all of their noises, pouncing and rubbing against things and chomping on food and everything. I'm going to stop doing that because it takes so long, and this is just my life. But if it becomes too obnoxious to listen to, please let me know. Meditation is a popular self-care and overall health practice that started thousands of years ago, has ebbed and flowed in popularity, and now it seems like it's more popular than it ever has been. It is being used in mental health practices, pain management, habit change practices, religious practices and prayer, even in Christianity, and many other things I don't even know about. Meditation can be a powerful tool and has been for me, but for many survivors of childhood trauma, it can be a frustrating and even a scary to use tool if they try to use it in the same ways that other people do. So I'm going to sidebar rant here for a second about this point. Part of our reality as survivors is that we are different. Our brains are different. Our nervous systems, hormonal systems, psyches, and perceptions of ourselves and the world developed differently than those who didn't suffer from childhood trauma. Our need for significant healing and the resources involved with that makes us different. And the astounding levels of strength, resilience, and self-trust we stand to gain by facing and overcoming our hurts, fears, and traumas makes us different. And this means we will always be different. But different doesn't have to be bad. This is an idea I've learned to embrace, but it took a while. I went through grief and overcoming a lot of fear to get to a point where I can view this as a great gift that I have been able to give myself. It's a silver lining many healing and healed survivors come to, but it is a profound experience when you get there. To realize that everything that I am and will be, that I love and I'm excited about and I'm proud of, only exists because of the opportunity that was forced on me by being traumatized as a child. That in no way condones, shows acceptance for, support for, or dismisses the reality and atrocity of childhood trauma, neglect, and abuse. It just means we get to take the power back and grow it tenfold and use the power we grew from those experiences to create greater goodness in ourselves and then with our families and potentially put it out into the rest of the world in place of the nastiness we went through. For every survivor who heals, there's a new generation within that family who gets a greater opportunity for being happier, healthier, and more capable than previous. The more happy, healthy families there are in the world, the greater chance at correcting all of the wrongs we see and feel and experience for us and generations to come. I can't save the world, but I can save me. And I know and accept how powerful that is. But it does make us irreversibly different. But different isn't bad. I feel an intense need to make this point and experience clear because a large part of today's conversation is about how survivors who haven't healed yet or are still working through their healing process often struggle and even backtrack because they try to change their mental, emotional, and physical health without seeking out professional help, and instead they try doing what works for other people, and it usually backfires because our brains and bodies learned to work differently than people who never had to survive in those ways. So the methods they use aren't always going to work for us. That does not mean it's a hopeless effort. It just means we have to face this as a fact, go through whatever we have to go through to accept it, and then we get to learn a different approach to accomplish our mental, emotional, and physical health goals, which is a perfect segue back into the episode topic. What is meditation? From Headspace.com, meditation isn't about becoming a different person, a new person, or even a better person. It's about training in awareness and getting a healthy sense of perspective. You're not trying to turn off your emotions or feelings or thoughts. You're learning to observe them without judgment. And eventually, you may start to better understand them as well. From VeryWellMind.com, meditation can be defined as a set of techniques that are intended to encourage a heightened state of awareness and focused attention. Meditation is also a consciousness-changing technique that has been shown to have a wide number of benefits on psychological well-being. And from the National Center of Complementary and Integrative Health, meditation has a long history of use for increasing calmness and physical relaxation, improving psychological balance, coping with illness, and enhancing overall health and well-being. There are many types of meditation, but most have four elements in common: a quiet location with as few distractions as possible, a specific comfortable posture, a focus of attention, being a word or a picture or a phrase or your breath, and an open attitude, letting distractions come and go naturally without judging them. In my own words, meditation is a practice that is me stopping or pausing to connect with myself or reconnect with myself, get to know myself, communicate with the more vulnerable parts of myself, and a place where I intentionally plant and nurture the things in me that I want to grow and gently weed out the things that no longer serve me. It's a practice that helps me stay grounded when I'm kicking ass, and it helps me to come back to the surface when I feel like I'm drowning. It's not magic or even really all that unique. It's a tool every human can get benefit from. It's just a matter of being willing to do the work that it takes to figure out what methods work best for you. So why does meditation matter? Meditation for survivors matters because it's a tool and a practice that we can learn and use independently. It's something that can help each of us build confidence in ourselves and our ability to heal. It's something that can be a small or large part of our healing process, and in any amount, it can make a significant difference in our ability to live with and eventually past our trauma and the mental illness it's caused. There are many benefits to meditation. Here's a list of a bunch of them: mental and emotional calm, easier focus and clarity of mind, increased productivity, greater self-awareness, greater sense of control, and that leads to greater confidence, increased contentment, which decreases our anxiety and depression, greater emotion management, greater resilience and stress tolerance, increased energy, decreased health risks, and greater control of physical health and healing, which means lower blood pressure, lower resting breath and heart rate, which is an indicator of health and disease, lower risk for diseases of the heart, lungs, digestive system, reproductive system, and metabolic diseases. Improved sleep, capable of deeper levels of relaxation, capable of greater levels of connection with yourself and with others, greater feelings of contentment and satisfaction with your life, and for those who practice spiritually, a feeling of greater connectedness to our spirit and creator. The good and bad of meditation for survivors of childhood trauma, neglect, and abuse. I'll start with the bad. Meditation is intentional introspection. It's a way of openly looking at, connecting with, and interacting with our true selves. That's not the bad part. If our true selves have been protected from childhood trauma, neglect, and abuse and is blocked from us by the pain, hurt, fear, anger, and shame that we've carried with us, then often what survivors experience when attempting meditation is, instead of getting connected with their true selves and all the benefits of that, they are face to face with all the experiences and the aftermath of those experiences that have hurt them for so long. And this will often cause a survivor further hurt by being triggered into reliving the trauma. And for them to stay away from the introspection through meditation, and too often, I think, it scares a lot of us away from seeking out other forms of self-care and help. I was introduced to meditation when I was in my first year of college. I was 19 years old. I took a stretch and relax class as my PE course, my PE credit. It was an hour two times a week when I got credit for chilling the fuck out. And as a 19-year-old college kid with mental illness, a bunch of baggage, putting myself through college and out on my own for the first time, I was in much need of some CTFO. In this class, the instructor took us through some light meditations throughout the class. I often would end up just laying there quietly but not doing the internal exercises because the first couple of times I tried, I was fine while she was guiding us, but once she stopped speaking so we could do the introspective part, I would go into these sort of scary imaginings of terrible things happening, and then I'd be fucking anxious for the rest of the day, if not the week or the month or whatever. It would put me in a cycle. So I just didn't do that part. And at the time, I was too busy and too tired to even approach trying to figure out what the hell was going on. It wasn't until I was in my mid-20s and I had just finished about 6 months of talk therapy with an awesome therapist who helped me sort of accomplish a few layers of healing, I was able to approach meditation again in a way that I actually started experiencing the benefits from it. As far as I can tell, there is no way to force your way past those protective parts of yourself, especially using meditation, because it is something that requires relaxation and releasing judgment. So we either have to seek out help and work on healing those protectors that are essentially standing between our conscious self and our true self, and/or we have to find another way to approach meditation and introspective tools. So this is the good part. There are a lot of ways to go about this. First, I will say, I don't think that there is a specific roadmap for any of us because every one of us has had unique experiences and responded in our own unique ways. And so a lot of the healing process, it can be frustrating for this reason, but a lot of the healing process really is based on us. So what I'm going to talk about is something that you will have to work through and figure out what works for you and what doesn't. So how can we experience the benefits of meditation as survivors? First, we have to understand and accept that depending on where we're at with our healing, that we may have limitations in our ability to meditate effectively. This is another one of those spots, I know we all get sick of hearing it, but you will need to practice patience, compassion, and forgiveness with yourself. And as you heal and grow through and past these experiences, maintain this practice of being patient with yourself and be honest about your current levels of tolerance. Part of what sucks about healing is that in many ways there's a lot of trial and error. As you heal and grow, you're always testing new skills and tolerances and ways of living, and it feels new in a lot of ways. And this means that sometimes we go too fast or too far, and we end up being triggered or somehow backtracked. As far as I can tell, this is just a normal, natural part of this process. It sucks, and it's part of what we have to go through to heal, but it is absolutely worth it. Second, practice other mindfulness activities first. If true introspection is too difficult at first, it might be easier to start with awareness building practices that don't involve you going inside yourself so much or so deeply. I went through many of these in my previous episode if you're interested. Once you feel comfortable with a few daily practices of just building awareness of yourself and how you interact with your world, then maybe try journaling or creating something or something introspective and even helping you process things in a more tangible way before you approach the much less tangible meditative experience. Building your self-awareness and conscious, clear-headed living slowly can be a great way to work toward the deeper introspective activities without them being as likely to trigger you or leave you feeling poorly. If you are using or wanting to use a guided practice, whether it's written instructions or recording or a live session, try to seek out trauma-informed meditative guides. I researched and found that it doesn't look like there's a specific certificate or education to benchmark this, but like all things, do your research on the professionals you're asking for help from, and there are many out there who create materials specifically for trauma survivors. I did find a few trainings for meditation leaders to use trauma-informed methods for leading meditations, and I am now excited to take one of those. I don't have any specific recommendations for who to work with because I've kind of bounced around a lot and I do searches for videos when I feel like I need them, but I've also done a lot of work on my own. I really like learning how things work, so I've learned a lot about how meditation works so that I can more so work on it myself. But if anyone has any recommendations, please let me know and I will announce those in the next episode. Fourth, the beginning of every meditation is reminding you to find or create a safe, comfortable place where you won't be distracted. When approaching meditation as a survivor, this might be one of the most important parts, as safety is typically our greatest concern, and if disrupted, it's the thing our protective parts are most likely triggered by. Often, survivors are better served being guided by a recording to start instead of a live person, because then there's no one there that we're worried about pleasing or judging us or anything else. It's just me and the recording. A lot of people, when they start meditation, make the mistake of doing it where and when other people have access to them. So a kiddo or an animal or a partner might come in not knowing what's going on, and now you're feeling vulnerable and even irritable and don't usually continue the practice. It's kind of hard to relax, let go, and trust yourself into a deep meditative state when someone barges in and says, "What are you doing?" And you're like, "I'm fucking meditating." It's kind of like someone saying stay calm, but no one ever stays calm when they're told to stay calm. So create an intentionally safe place. This likely means letting people know who want your attention that you will be unavailable for 20 minutes, or creating or using a space that's already private just for your use, or whatever you need to do to not be interrupted. Lock the door, shut the shades, turn off your phone, grab your favorite blanket, light your favorite candle, whatever you have to do to feel completely safe and comfortable so you can completely surrender to the process. For those who haven't experienced meditation, here's a summary of what typically happens from my understanding. Meditation will usually start with focusing on your body and breathing and releasing tension and slowing your breath rate down. Then you'll usually be talked down and learn to talk yourself down into what's considered a meditative state. This is when most guides will give you imagery or something that helps you start using your imagination in a light, easy way and let go of conscious reality. Then you'll likely be taken into the deep part of the meditation where you're introspecting. Often they'll ask questions or make suggestions or use further guided imagery to guide you into what you're trying to work on. Then at some point, they'll instruct you to focus on an image or a word or an answer to a question or your inner child or something that continues the work that was set up in the previous step. And then they'll be quiet for a while. This seems to depend on the length of the meditation, but for a 15 to 20 minute meditation, it's usually between like 2 and 5 minutes, I think. Then they'll usually gently start speaking again to bring you back into the meditative state that wasn't quite as deep. They'll typically suggest or instruct you to let go of the image or word or idea that you had been working on. Then they'll talk you back up into consciousness, bringing your awareness into what you can hear and feel, and then wiggling your fingers and toes or stretching like you're waking up, and then opening your eyes and smiling or taking a deep breath as you come back to reality. And that brings us to number 5. Choose topics that are better than tolerable. If you choose to focus on something that is triggering, which will happen by accident sometimes, you will need to stop and reset or try again another time. It can work well to start with topics or ideas that are light and broad to help you practice getting into the meditative state and learn to trust the process. I started with and go back to, when I'm truly overwhelmed, stress relief, relaxation, and sleep meditations. Something broad and general and easy for anyone to relate to. As you build your skill, tolerance, and get further into healing, you will be able to more easily dig deeper. This is a part that can be highly dependent on your intuition. With meditation, it is often easier to feel what you need than to say or decide what you need. This becomes a practice in getting to know and trust yourself. Take your time getting into deeper or more complex topics. Number 6, do everything you can to keep the pressure off. Once you start having good experiences with meditation, it's easy to want to go deeper, faster, do more, but it may backfire. Take your time and enjoy the progress you make as you make it. And lastly, remember why you are practicing meditation. It's not because I think it's a good idea or it's popular or your best friend got great benefits from it. It's because you're choosing it as a part of your healing journey and a tool in your toolbox. And if you don't like it or don't want to do it, then don't. There are so many ways you can grow and heal. This is just one. Plus, like I did, you may come back to it at some point. It will always be here, non-judgmentally available for you. My current meditation practice, usually as a part of my morning routine, I do 15 to 20 minutes. I'm using a practice I learned from therapy to specifically work on strengthening parts of myself and building self-trust. I usually do this without guidance or music. I used to need guidance or at least music, but I actually really enjoy it just being me most days. On days when I don't enjoy it just being me, I will search for and find a guided meditation that's specific to what I'm experiencing, like anxiety, fear of something specific, brain fog, or whatever else it might be. Some days I am just not feeling it and I skip it or I try and then stop and move on. A couple of times a week, I'll listen to a meditation or hypnosis right before I go to sleep that's specific to my goals right now. And 6 out of 7 days, it's one of the best parts of my day. But that 7th day, I view as a practice in acceptance and self-love because either I'm busy or I'm having a bad day or I decided to sleep and have a lazy day. I'm human, and this practice is for me, not the person who a perfectionist would want me to be. Some final tips for practicing meditation. The amount of time is very personal. I used to be able to tolerate only about like 5 minutes. I've tried long ones, like up to an hour, and usually quit about 30 minutes. I think 15 to 20 minutes most days is my sweet spot. Second, when your mind wanders or your imagination gets going, just gently bring it back to the topic. It's normal and natural for all humans, not just survivors, and it's part of the point of the practice. You are practicing sitting in non-judgment of yourself while guiding yourself where you want to go. 3, as emotions and sensations change throughout your practice, do what you can to release them or let them pass through you. This is also a normal, natural part of the process that is also a part of the point of meditation. Practicing noticing your emotions and experiences, and then choosing ones to live in and embody while accepting all of them as a part of you. 4, if you get triggered or it's just not working today, it's 100% okay to just drop it. Do not try to force your way through it or turn it into a point to beat yourself up over. Sometimes we fail at it. Even people who are healed and practiced at it, sometimes it's just not going to work. Often when this happens, journaling is my next best thing to try to figure out what's blocking me or causing me to have to stop. And then the detail of my experiences is something I usually keep to myself. This is an extremely personal experience. And one way I can keep myself safe while I'm practicing is to keep my experiences to myself, even if I'm with other people at the time. It's too easy for someone to accidentally, unconsciously, or intentionally say something in judgment that causes my very vulnerable and open experience to shut down from the inside out. Maybe some can do this and be good to go, but I'm not there. So I recommend keeping it to yourself or only within the people that you really trust the most. And finally, meditation is a practice based in love, curiosity, and non-judgment. It can be a powerfully safe place for you to build from. Take your time. practice patience, compassion, self-forgiveness, acceptance, and love. You are worth it, and you are capable. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon. If you'd like to write in to ask questions, request topic coverage, share an experience, or let me know how I can improve your experience with the pause, you can email me at ctfolistener@gmail.com. If you want to see the pause in your feed, like and subscribe on Instagram and Facebook by searching at ctfopausecast. Disclaimer. I am not a mental health professional or even a life coach. This podcast is not a substitute for professional mental health help. I am simply a healing survivor working to support a community I am a part of. I always encourage you to reach out, do your research, and find the professional help you need to overcome your internal obstacles and move forward. To that end, I will always post in show notes any resources I find and use and any that listeners send in as a way to make it easier for you to find the help that you need. With so much love and support, I hope you're feeling awesome. But if you aren't, I hope you can find a way to chill the fuck out.